was a pop and a cloud of smoke. Bjorn Hammerhock picked himself up, shaking his head.
"That was lucky," he said. "Could have been a nasty accident there."
He tried to fan some of the smoke away, and then reached for the file again. His hand went through it.
"Ahem!"
Bjorn tried again. The file was as insubstantial as the smoke.
"What?"
"Ahem!"
The owner of the strange device was staring in horror at something on the floor. Bjorn followed his gaze.
"Oh,"
he said. Realization, which had been hovering on the edge of Bjorn's consciousness, finally dawned. That was the thing about death. When it happened to you, you were among the first to know. His visitor grabbed the device from the bench and rammed it into a cloth bag. Then he looked around wildly, picked up the corpse of Mr. Hammerhock, and dragged it through the door towards the river. There was a distant splash, or as close to a splash as he could get from the Ankh.
"Oh dear," said Bjorn, "and I can't swim either."
"That will not, of course, be a problem," said Death.
Bjorn looked at him.
"You're a lot shorter than I thought you'd be," he said.
"This is because I'm kneeling down, Mr. Hammerhock."
"That damn thing killed me."
"Yes.
That's the first time anything like that has ever happened to me."
"To anyone. But not, I suspect, the last time."
Death stood up. There was a clicking of knee joints. He no longer cracked his skull on the ceiling. There wasn't a ceiling anymore. The room had gently faded away. There were such things as dwarf gods. Dwarfs were not a naturally religious species, but in a world where pit props could crack without warning, and pockets of fire damp could suddenly explode, they'd seen the need for gods as the sort of supernatural equivalent of a hard hat. Besides, when you hit your thumb with an 8-pound hammer, it's nice to be able to blaspheme. It takes a very special and strong-minded kind of atheist to jump up and down with their hand clasped under their other armpit and shout, "Oh, random fluctuations in the space-time continuum," or "Arg, primitive and outmoded concept on a crutch." Bjorn didn't waste time asking questions. A lot of things become a shade urgent when you're dead.
"I believe in reincarnation," he said.
"I know.
I tried to live a good life. Does that help?"
"That is not up to me," Death coughed. "Of course, since you believe in reincarnation, you'll be Bjorn again."
He waited.
"Yes, that's right," said Bjorn.
Dwarfs are known for their sense of humour, in a way. People point them out and say, "Those little devils haven't got a sense of humour."
Was there anything amusing in the statement I just made?"
No, I don't think so."
"It was a pun, or play on words. Bjorn again."
"Yes."
"Did you notice it?"
"I can't say I did."
"Oh."
"Sorry?"
"I've been told I should try to make the occasion a little more enjoyable."
"Bjorn again?"
"Yes."
"I'll think about it."
"Thank you."
"Right," said Sergeant Colon. "This man is your truncheon, also nomenclature your nightstick or baton of office."
He paused while he tried to remember his army days and brightened up.
"And you will look after it," he shouted. "You will eat with it. You will sleep with it. You..."
"Excuse me."
"Who said that?"
"Down here. It's me, Lance Constable Cuddy."
"Yes, Pilgrim."
"How do we eat with it, Sergeant?"
Sergeant Colon's wound-up machismo wound down. He was suspicious of Lance Constable Cuddy. He strongly suspected Lance Constable Cuddy was a troublemaker.
"What? Well, do we use it as a knife or a fork or cut in half for chopsticks or what?"
"What are you talking about?"
"Excuse me, Sergeant."
"What is it, Lance Constable Angua?"
"How exactly do we sleep with it, sir?"
"Well, I meant..."
"Corporal Nob, stop that sniggering right now."
Colon adjusted his breastplate and decided to strike out in a new direction.
"Now, what we have here is a puppet, mommet or heffergy.
indicating a vaguely humanoid shape made of leather and stuffed with straw, mounted on a stake. "Called by that nickname of Hertha, weapons training for the Hughes Hoff. Forward, Lance Constable Angua. Tell me, Lance Constable, do you think you could kill a man?"
"How long will I have?"
There was a pause while they picked up Corporal Nobbs and patted him on the back until he settled down.
"Very well," said Sergeant Colon. "What you must do now is take your truncheon like so, and on the command of one, proceed smartly to Harther, and on the command of two, tap him smartly upon the bunts. Her one, her two."
The truncheon bounced off Arthur's helmet.
"Very good, only one thing wrong. Anyone tell me what it was?"
They shook their heads.
"From behind," said Sergeant Colon. "You hit him from behind. No sense in risking trouble, is there? Now, you have a go, Lance Constable Cuddy."
"But, Sarge, do it."
They watched.
"Perhaps we could fetch him a chair,"
said Angua after an embarrassing 15 seconds. Detritus sniggered.
"Him too little to be a guard," he said.
Lance Constable Cuddy stopped jumping up and down.
"Sorry, Sergeant," he said. "This isn't how dwarves do it, see?"
"It's how guards do it," said Sergeant Colon. "All right, Lance Constable Detritus, don't salute. You give it a try."
Detritus held the truncheon between what must technically be called thumb and forefinger and smashed it over Arthur's helmet. He stared reflectively at the truncheon's stump. Then he bunched up his, for want of a better word, fist, and hammered Arthur over what was briefly its head until the stake was driven 3 feet into the ground.
"Now the dwarf can have a go," he said.
There was another embarrassed 5 seconds. Sergeant Colon cleared his throat.
"Well, yes, I think we can consider him thoroughly apprehended," he said. "Make a note, Corporal Nobbs, Lance Constable Detritus don't salute. Deducted $1 for loss of truncheon. And you're supposed to be able to ask him questions afterwards."
He looked at the remains of Arthur.
"I think a roundabout now is a good time to demonstrate the fine points of archery," he said.
End of CD 2.